Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Stephen Reed podcast. Today we're joined by Enno and Andy from Le Bon Music, and we're talking about how they're making waves in the underground music scene. Welcome, Enno and Andy. Thank you for joining me on today's podcast. You guys, I know you guys from Le Bon Music. We've only really met once, but we've talked a fair bit over the internet recently, over Facebook. But yeah, myself and a few mates came to one of your events fairly recently. I think it was the Harrison BDP event at Face Bar. And then we contacted you and started getting involved. And then we came to a recent event, and now you guys are getting involved with Will's EP launch that's coming up. So can you tell me a little bit about Le Bon Music, what it is, where it all started?
No. It started with me and Maeve, who are both, we both started playing music at the student radio on campus. And we had our own little radio show, but it didn't really get off its feet, and it was mostly a bit of fun. But while there, we came up with the idea, well, she mainly came up with the idea of having a Facebook group to share music in, because we had been doing that for a while, just like sharing links with each other, just back and forth of music we found. And then we thought, let's involve other people, and we started adding our friends, and then we added one guy who just started adding more and more and more people, who then started adding their own friends. Wow. And it started becoming a really big group. And going off that, we kind of thought, we want to do something with our time at uni rather than just studying. So let's create a night based off that group.
Awesome.
That's how it all began.
So it was initially a Facebook group for sharing music then?
Yeah.
And then, so it's all very much based in Reading, because I assume that it's all based on contacts that people know.
That's kind of funny, because it kind of went outside of Reading as well, because people started adding their friends from back home, as well as international students adding their friends back home. And so we've got a pretty big base in Spain as well. Where else? America's got a few people as well. Just, and then you can see, like, through Facebook, the analytics of, like, where people are based and, like, where people click on it and stuff like that.
So you've got a worldwide following then?
A little bit, but not that big. It's mostly Reading and other places.
Yeah. I was looking, doing a bit of research last night for a podcast, and it said that you guys you've got, like, 500 people that like the page, but in the group you've got like 750 people that are part of like the music sharing platform, which is really sick.
Yeah, we've started focusing more now on the nights than supporting the group, but the group is still active, but it's kind of gotten more stagnant now, of like we don't really get a steady stream of people joining anymore. But 700 is still, it's starting to catch up.
I think people are starting to post a little bit more again.
Yeah,
I think like a good, what we need to do is, we've said we're going to try and engage people more with it, so like we'll ask discussions and things, because you know, like a lot of the time I think, you know, there's certain times where people have exams and that, and it's like you don't really want to be on Facebook that much, or a lot of people don't want to be, or if you're on there you want to have a look for a little bit, you don't necessarily want to be like going on YouTube and going on that giant sort of, you know, and you go down the rabbit hole of finding about 50 different links all related to each other. You know.
It's good procrastination, though.
Yeah, for sure. So what have been the events been like then? Because I know you've done around like 8 now, haven't you?
Yeah. It all started quite small. Well, we already started putting on house parties in our houses for like just our friends. And then we decided to look for a bar. And up the junction at Cemetery Junction in Reading, they were willing to have us in their function room in the back, just like a capacity of, was it 80, something like
that? Yeah, it's about 80, 90, 90.
And that went all fine for the first two events, but then it kind of grew too big for what it was, and we had to start looking elsewhere. And we had a few events at the Dairy, one of the campus bars from the university, and those were really, really successful. Like, it pretty much filled the place out, because it was also free events back then, and that went really well as well. But then finally, last year, we started booking artists by chance, pretty much.
Yeah. I think one of the big things that was that was the fact that the year before, loads of people had, like, really good houses to do things like house parties in. And, like, this year, it was very, very much like no one really had the sort of spaces
very
for
much,
it.
Yeah.
And, it, I mean, it, obviously, like, we were growing up as well, which made a massive difference, but there's a lot more sort of pressure to think, actually, like, the only way we're going to deliver something where all we can play and we can get enough people in and actually have a decent event that isn't too cramped is if we actually just host our own one, you know, which is nice, really, because I think this year there's definitely been... I think nightlife in Reading as a total has taken a little bit of a hit for some reason. Like, there's a lot of... There used to be a lot more independent events, I remember, when I was, like, you know, maybe, like, 2-3 years ago... I think, you know, one of the main clubs we a lot of us used to go to was, like, Club 20, which then became Eva's, which then just got shut down. And that used to have a lot of, like, I don't know, never used to do a little bit of house, but a lot of it was, like, I don't know, garage or drum and bass, that sort of thing. But just sort of music that wasn't a themed student-y club night that was a bit tacky, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So I always assumed that the Bond music was almost like a house project, really, because... The two events that I went to were house, but I was looking through some of the mixes that are on your SoundCloud, because you've got like a bit of a project going there as well, where you just, people are doing like mixtapes and stuff. Yeah. And one of them was like really disco-y and had a bit of jazz and bit of that next thing, which is really cool. So, is there a certain musical direction that it is going in?
Well, that's the one thing that we've had a lot of discussion in, because we started off more like a free-for-all of just try and get anything in there. Like, some of our first events that we did, I was, you know, like, we had, you know, like, you were playing a lot of techno, a lot of disco, sort of. We had Sam, who likes a lot of sort of more floatier, sort of like left-field stuff, a bit of electro. But I was, you know, like, I was doing a bit more. I was doing some house and stuff, but I was playing things like jungle as well. Like, so there was a lot of variation, but... I feel like now it's starting to hone in a little bit more. Like, you know.
I think one of the rough ideas was as well that Reading as a town has got a lot of drum and bass, lot of it, and less so other genres. Mm-hmm. And that gap is something we wanted to fill. So that's probably the one genre that you'll hear less from us. But other than that, anything really went for a really long time. But just, I think it's also a chance that we... we're flirting towards house more, but we would definitely like to have some other headliners as well from other genres that are underrepresented in the city.
So is that then just by chance that because you managed to get some like big house, underground house names involved that they took off?
It started with Alexander, who's like a Turkish artist. And he did a competition on his Facebook group, on his Facebook page, pretty much. And I won it, and I started chatting to him to give him my address and stuff like that. And we were already thinking about booking an artist, and we started chatting, and suddenly I said, like, oh, would you like to play one of our events, and, like, we book you? And he said, like, yeah, sure. So he did it for us, which was really sound. But then we kind of thought, like, we've got to keep on booking that. Mm. We can't, like, go back on our, like, on this upgrade. And then Harris and BDP came, and then Finn.
So how have you reached out to those following artists then, after your initial success?
To Harrison BDP, Alexander and Harrison BDP already played together, and Harrison's got one release on Alexander's label. So... kind of went from there that I spoke to Alexander, and he was like, yeah, get in touch with Harrison, and then he was a bit more keen to play for us as well, but he's getting bigger and bigger, so
yeah, for sure.
We caught him right before he
definitely. We were all really surprised that you guys managed to get a name like Harrison BDP at the time, and so, which is why I think you guys, the reputation that Le Bon Music has got now is, in a lot, in my eyes at least, is growing massively because of the, like, just the caliber of the artists that you're getting, which is really sound. So I don't know what you guys are planning then for the future after your recent success.
There's some things being in the works, nothing final yet. So I don't really know what I can talk about or not, okay, in case they fall through.
I mean, I think the one of the big things we're waiting on actually is Just After Dark, to be honest, because we had a really, really great event there. We got really well on, well everyone, but obviously they've had a massive problem with the fact they might have their license revoked because of, like, one family complaining who lived near them, basically. And, you know, the Reading Borough Council are quite anti them and definitely want them to be sort of shut down and quite annoyed at them.
Yeah.
So what's the story then behind the After Dark? Because it's a club that my parents have been going to like, for a while. So it's not just for young students, right?
For as long as I've known about it, it's been threatened with closure, to be fair.
The thing about After Dark is what's happened is it's like, it has been going for years. Apparently in the 70s it used to be like a reggae club as well. Like, there's a, and it's had a lot of different sort of guises over the year. But I think for like the last, I think it's at least the last 10 years, maybe even more, maybe even 20, it had an owner called, I think he was called Neil something. And he owned it right up until about, I think it must have been about 2017.
Yeah, it was
probably. And, or maybe like earlier on, it must have been 2017. But how it started was, as my, two of my mates that I was living at the time were running something in Reading called Incognita Radio, and they really wanted to do an event there, and they were like digging around online, like just trying to find whoever it was to speak to, because, you know, like they, and they just quite struggling to just find contact information and that. And the reason that was because when they briefly spoke to like the old manager, but like as soon as they sorted something out with them and a date, he basically sort of got ousted. I don't know why, but they got the person who runs it now is like the son of the people who own it, and he's called Z. He basically joined it and didn't really know that much about nightclubs. Like, he very much was like, I've never really been to them, you know, like, I don't really know how to run them. But he has some very, like, he's very creative in the sense of, like, he wants to make it sort of like a multi-purpose venue, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I remember back in the day when they were doing events with him, he wanted to, like, add a cafe in there, and he wanted to do all sorts of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of it he actually has followed through with, because, you know, it used to be about 20, you know, like, a couple of years ago when I first went to Reading, it was literally just a club that was open on Friday and Saturday night. It did, like, I think it did, like, 80s music on, like, a Friday, and on Saturday it did everything else, you know, like, pop music up to the 2000s or whatever. And, like, no one really did events there. Like, it was only the club nights that held. It very much had a core fan base who apparently went most weeks and whatever. And they still have that. Z's managed to keep Pep because he's done a lot of the similar nights. But he's tried to do things like comedy nights, and he's tried to do things like LGBT nights, that sort of thing, and sort of just engage a bit more people into it, because the only way as an independent venue you're going to keep going is if lots of different people come, if you know what I mean. You know, you can't just survive on like a core audience anymore. You know?
It's a shame, because it seems to be a bit of a theme nationally, not just in Reading, where like nightclubs, places like this that have a history and a culture going there seem to be getting threatened with closure. I know, obviously, Fabric in London is one of the more prolific and well-known about ones.
London is taking steps soon to try and improve that. Like, they've got grassroots protection there now. Not nowhere near what it should be, but it still protects venues a bit more than other towns and cities have. So, like, After Dark has got a lot tougher to try and work its way out of it. But hopefully they do. I remember when I first met Z right after he took over, I was really trying to push for, like, there is this gap for underground music in Reading, and you've got this cool, super cool venue, you can do something with it, and they, like, fill that gap for, like, a regular, like, stream of nights that host underground music. But he sort of, as Andy said, he was sort of like testing the waters himself because he wasn't really sure how to run it. And I think it only took till last year, like Incognito was a big help for that. But then only like the end of like this year that he really started to open up to having like frequent nights there, stuff like that.
So how have you guys found organising and running events then? Because it's something that I'm very much in the process of helping my mate Will out with. We're looking at some of the posters right now, actually, which we've just got printed today. Like, what was the process that you guys have gone through for some of your like bigger events?
Well, I think the first thing you need to do is we're very, very lucky to have like on our team Ben, who's a really, really good graphic designer. He does all of our design for thing, and like the first thing obviously is we, you know, sort of decide who we'd like to book. But the big thing about that is afterwards, like, how are we going to design something that we think people will actually really like? You know, he goes away, spends a lot of hours sort of like getting a really nice design for it. And then, you know, we'll write something about it, and then we'll just try and get it out to people as early as possible so they actually come. Yeah. And then the main thing is us, you know, being at university, trying to talk to people as much as possible, trying to engage them. You know, just trying to keep them interested about it, really.
What does that look like then? Are you just standing on a corner handing out leaflets about it?
Or
are you just
word of mouth? It's quite casual, if you know what I mean. So, like, for instance, I'm quite lucky in my job. I'll have a lot of people who come up to the bar whenever I serve them. And like, oh, I saw you've got an event out. Or, you know, if I'm chatting to them. Because, you know, a lot of the time people know I like music. So if people are talking to me at the bar who I don't even necessarily know that well, they'll always be like, oh, like, have you got any gigs up soon? Or, like, is there anything on in Reading? You know, like, people just like to know things, to be honest. Mm. Like, in some ways, the fact that there isn't a lot in Reading isn't, I mean, it isn't great, but it has sort of strangely worked to our advantage because there are a lot more people sort of hungry for things to happen. So, like,
yeah.
You know, we'll always have people sort of saying to me or other people, oh, is there anything going on soon? You know, like, feels like there haven't been anything on in a while. And it just sort of flows into very much like, oh, you should come to our things, you know. Okay. We don't really have to aggressively promote to anyone, you know.
No, I think at the beginning it was mostly word of mouth, really. Yeah. And that's how we got people involved, friends telling their friends. Similar to the group, really. But then there's also a lot of, like, background planning other than the trying to get people involved. It all starts with finding a venue and a date and time, everything. And then once you've got that and you know how much the venue costs, then you can go on to who do we book for the night or what's the plan. And then from then onwards, like, the promotion can start. And it's kind of like a process. And it was kind of like we had to learn as we went because none of us had organised events before.
Sure.
And then, like, the first time it went actually quite smooth. The second time onwards, it was more people, and then it got a bit more hectic. And then the third time was something entirely different. And then each time,
okay,
yeah, you make mistakes each time, and then you learn from them, and you take them into the next event.
Sure. So you mentioned there something about costs of hosting these gigs at certain venues and hiring the like the big names that are going to come. What does it look like financially? Is it viable for you? Or is it, you know, are there lots of people involved, and, you know, do you make money back from it? What's the situation with that?
We've been really lucky that we've had Sam on our team who is pretty good at handling money, because none of us others know how to manage the finances that well. But we don't make any money on it ourselves. We put everything that we earn back into the next event, so that we can continue building on it. It'd be nice to one day earn money of it ourselves, but for now, it's just really good to just have this little project that we just keep building and building and building. And as long as it's still satisfying for us to do it like that, then I think we should keep on doing it. Because I was speaking to someone else, another promoter, a while ago, and he said that once it starts getting too stressful, like, you shouldn't bother with organising events anymore. And I thought that was a really good little thought. But for us, there's still quite like a passion there.
Exactly, yeah. And we have been quite lucky in the sense that we have had quite a bit of a core audience. So we haven't really had to put in much of our own money into it at all, like, which has been quite lucky. Like, you know, like a lot of, you know, you see a lot of, you know, like in terms of drum and bass as well, going in Reading, I know quite a lot of promoters and that who do that, and they have to front a lot of money to do things, and we've been quite lucky in the sense that we haven't, if you know what I mean. And we also haven't, we've been quite lucky in the sense that we haven't had a night that's gone really badly, so we haven't had a loss or anything, you know, like.
No.
Brilliant. Yeah, have you made profits then on any of your events so far?
A little bit, but our last event was quite a lot more expensive, so we basically almost used, you know, like a lot of our profit to host that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, like, because After Dark as a club is more expensive to rent things like Face Bar. We had to hire decks, normally we use my ones, but he wanted some nicer ones, and obviously that costs money and things. There's just certain things that, like, add to the bill, if you know what I mean, yeah.
And if you keep trying to deliver with an equally good artist as the previous, or equally famous, rather, then it's going to keep getting more and more expensive as well, because you need to accommodate to the artist that you book, and... like Andy said, then you've got to get the specific decks and all this stuff, and you might not always have it available, so then that goes a lot in it, or depending on the venue you might have to hire extra equipment just generally.
So the first event I came to, both of you actually played that event yourselves. So I'm really curious as well then to find out your own journey. So I don't know, maybe we'll start with you, Andy. Okay. So when did you start first getting into music, and what's the journey been from then to today?
It's quite a long one, to be honest. Like, I've been playing a lot of instruments for absolutely years. So, like, I actually went to, like, when I was like 14 to like 15, I used to be a lot more into metal. So I've recorded probably about 20 different metal albums through different guises. I've got a lot of it's online. I still make a little bit money from it now, but because I have a couple of things on Spotify and stuff. But like, when I went to uni, like, I wanted to form a band originally. Like, I wanted to do all that sort of stuff. I didn't mind some electronic music, but I was never that into it, if you know what I mean. And because Reading doesn't really have that many bands, like, there's not really much of a scene for it either, you know, like, it was quite hard to find like-minded people. Like, you'd have a few band practices with people, but ultimately I think they just couldn't really be bothered to continue or do things, and it was, so that's when I sort of started making a bit more electronic music, just because I was going to more club events and stuff, and I thought, you know what, actually I quite like some of this, like the odd song that wasn't, you know, like cheese music or whatever that you'd normally hear. I think, oh, I might try and make something a bit like this. Spent a couple of years, you know, just sort of doing that as well, getting a little bit better at it, and, you know, like, then I thought, you know, during producing a lot of this sort of music, I started off producing sort of house music, and thought, actually, if I, you know, why don't I thought about DJing? I do, you know, it's a strange concept, because, you know, like, I love listening to music, and that, I thought, you know, like, I thought as a producer, like, why don't I start DJing? When really, they're completely different, what they call disciplines. But I found I really got involved with that, really liked it. You know, started mainly DJing drum and bass with my friends, if you know what I mean, because that's what they were into and that was something I could do. But, I don't know, then I started sort of getting much more involved. I like doing a lot more multi-genre stuff now, so I like doing, you know, like going from like slower BPMs to higher, faster stuff, if you know what I mean. Like, I like going on a bit of a journey rather than sort of playing like one genre for like a whole hour. But yeah, and then start making all sorts of music, you know, like, you know, I make a lot of, I make a lot of, like, grime, I make a lot of, like, sort of more, like, deep dub, sort of dubstep sort of stuff. I make quite a lot of house still, you know, at the moment I'm basically wrapping up, like, a jungle album, which is, like, influences from, like, R&B, like, just, like, very vocal, very, like, old school sounding stuff from, like, the 90s that I'm trying to finish off. But yeah, all sorts. Yeah,
and that's very cool.
Where I am now, really.
So diverse, then. And we were talking just before we started the podcast about your recent set at Glastonbury. So
yeah,
do you want to tell us a little bit about how that came about? Well,
so I was very lucky in the sense that I already had tickets to go. And one of my housemates basically just tagged me in something on Facebook where this bar called the Rum Shack, it, you know, it's in like the southeast corner in Glastonbury. They're doing a competition where if you you could win like a half hour DJ slot, if you know, like you just had to put one song I'd like to play at the Rum Shack, and I just picked this really random song that when I went a couple of years ago to the festival, my mate sort of got their Bluetooth speaker out and he was like, "Oh, Andy, put something on." And I put on this really strange song. It's by a guy called William Onyebor, who's like this African like synth pop guy. He makes a lot of soul as well. And and it's called "When the Going Is Smooth and Good," and it's like 13 minutes long. But and it's a really sort of this. I think it was made in like the late 70s or very early 80s. And it's just a very like happy song, if you know what I mean. It's quite interesting. Like I've put it on in our places before, like mates, and they've been like, "What the hell is this? Like we've got to turn this off." And like for some people, absolutely love it. Like, and I feel like people who actually like music and more interesting music will actually like hearing it because it doesn't really sound like westernized music. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's not that westernized, but at the same time, it's an electronic song with like a 4x4 beat. So.
Okay.
It sort of is.
Do you think maybe it's a good song then to test the water with, like, who is a real, like, music fan, though, and who
well,
just,
guess,
like,
yeah, yeah.
putting the radio on and just listening
yeah,
to it?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. And, but, yeah, I played, this song, I just thought, everyone really liked it last time. I'll put that because it's a bit of an anthem for all of us. And they picked me, which is really nice, and, like, you know. And then, literally, on the Wednesday of Glastonbury, which is really strange, and we were walking through, we went past a shop and they just happened to be playing it at like 1 and 2 in the morning. And we were like, "Oh, it's that song." And they were like, "Yeah, it is. How did you know it?" And they gave us like a load of maracas and that. And we were just stood there for like 15 minutes just playing it. It's quite funny, really.
So, out of the confidence. I imagine. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you didn't surely play the whole 13 minutes of this song an hour set, right?
No, I didn't. My mates really wanted me to, but I was like, there's too many songs I want to play, so... When I got to that, I started off with that. Luckily, the good people before me who also won a set, they were, like, playing some disco and that, and it fits really well into that because it's very much a 4x4 beat. So yeah, I did that, and then I just sort of went into some house, some, you know, a bit of like sort of garagey stuff, and then just sort of went into some rave. Really, like, I love a lot of like early 90s rave and jungle, that sort of thing. So, you know, loads of big piano riffs and break beats, that sort of thing. So I did quite a lot of that, and then I just went up to jungle, you know, but like played a good like, I don't know, 26 songs in half an hour.
Dude,
that's what I like doing. Really,
that's
like
pretty crazy.
Doing, you know, like.
Just over a minute a song.
I think I'm quite a fidgety person, so when I play live, I hate to do the whole, like, you know, like, I do really love DJs who really cleverly do progressively mixing stuff, because I've always been brought up here listening to loads of grime sets and stuff. I like chopping or,
yeah.
you know, loading it up and then bringing someone else, so there's always something going on, like, every so often, if you know what I mean. I think it's because when I'm standing there, I feel like I'm just sat on the DJ mixer. I don't just want to be sitting there like tweaking knobs, looking like I'm doing something when I can't. Like, I like switching over and going a bit mental. But you know, there's some people, like, I've got a lot of friends who are like, "Oh, like you mix too quickly or whatever." But, you know, I always make sure, you know, there's key moments are happening in songs. I'm not just like switching it over when nothing's happening. Sure. Like, you know, like, I spend a lot of time, like, preparing my songs so I know when to switch them out and when to do all that.
So are you actually editing your songs or are you preparing, like,
well,
a playlist ready
for it?
It's
actually I do a bit of both, really. I mean, when you play on CDJs, you just use, like, record box software. So, like, you can add, like, points where you can, like, tell the CDJ that you're playing on to, like, "Oh, go 58 seconds in at this point because there's a kick drum here and it's going to add a new bit just so I..." You know, get rid of like the intro or something, it will take a while. Or there are times, you know, especially like older songs, you know, like I play like a lot of the jungle I play, like I have to, like, I get vinyl rips, you know, like there's people who put them online because there's nowhere else to get them. And the sad thing is at the moment, like, especially on like Discogs, where the big online place to buy records, there's a lot of what people call like Discogs sharps or like selling very, you know, they're inflating the price of these records. So, like, you know, like most people can't afford them, if you know what I mean. I mean, jungle 20 years ago was a very much a working class genre where, you know, like all the records were quite cheap to buy because people literally just making them, giving them to their friends or whatever, you know, like. And now these records are all going for like 90 quid a piece, and it's like no one can really afford to, you know, do that.
No.
And also the thing is, I would be very scared to buy something like that because they're so fragile. Like, yeah. If you bought something for £90 and it just snapped, or you know, you bring it home and they warp or something, you know, yeah. Things happen to them, if you know what I mean. Sure. But yeah, I mean, hopefully, a lot of the people that upload them as well are very much like people who've had those records for years, and the reason why they do it is because they want everyone to hear them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure artists in 20, you know, like, if I found most artists would want people to still listen to their music, you know, like, they don't particularly want their stuff to just be buried on forever, if you know what I mean.
Of course.
Only a few very select collectors can have, you know.
Definitely. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So, you're like, a whole mixture there of, you're an instrumentalist initially, but now you're very much into producing and mixing as a DJ and electronic music.
In future, I want to start, you know, I have visions to sort of combine the two together. Like, I'd love to be able to have a studio where I have like a nice drum kit and stuff, because I'd like to do things where I make like live disco tracks or like more live garage, that sort of thing. Because, you know, like, I think a lot of producers are missing a trick. Like, people are starting to do it more, but, you know, like, I would love to have, like, you know, like, if I sample things like bongo drum, I find it so much easier to just have a nice pair that I could mic up and just do myself, and then you've got them all done. Like, you know, things like that, really. Yeah.
That's awesome. And Enlo, then, tell us like where it all began for you.
Mine's going to be so much less impressive.
That doesn't matter. I want to hear it either way.
It kind of began from like a small like interest being sparked when my cousin started to get a little bit of fame back in Belgium, because they all DJ'd, and one of my cousins had a DJ duo called 2x4, who, much like Andy, won a DJ competition and could play Tomorrowland.
Oh, jeez.
And from then on, they started playing more and more gigs in Belgium, but I was still quite young back then. But like, I was always like a little bit like, whoa, that's kind of cool. And from there on, I got my own decks and I started to play a little bit as well, influenced by them a little bit, because they played very heavy or melodic techno. I was enjoying it quite a lot, but then I came to Reading for university and there was no techno whatsoever. Like, nobody did techno. And I was kind of like sad about that, in a sense, because like people didn't really know that much about it either. But like, it was the main genre that I was into at the time. And then with my own decks, I started like practicing more and more and more. And then come second year of university, house parties started to happen and I started to play most of those. And my music style shifted a bit more to house because that's what people like more over techno. Because like, I wasn't going to play in a living room, heavy German techno. And like nowadays, I still like German techno, but I'm less gravitating towards that. And I like a bit more of a shift between house, acid, breakbeat, all that stuff. That's pretty much it. Like, I haven't really got that much. We saw Le Bon as well, mainly out of... we want to take it from the living room to a club.
It almost feels like Le Bon music started as a necessity rather than just a project that you guys wanted to do, because
a little bit.
You guys are like, there's something that you all love, and it's not going on in your local spot, so you've just made it happen, which I think is really cool, because like I'm saying, I'm actually more local. I haven't been to Reading Uni. I live sort of Newbury area, and actually you're quite right, there isn't a scene for this kind of stuff. We've been to one or two drum and bass events, but actually if we want to go anywhere for a music event, it's usually London or Bristol. And so it was so refreshing when we came across Le Bon music doing stuff in our local area, because it meant that there was finally a scene, and maybe there was before that I didn't know about, but actually now I can see that not only is there a scene, but that it's going places. And you know, you guys, having met you now, I can tell that you guys have got a lot of ideas and lots of passions and projects in mind.
Yeah.
So really, is there a strong link to the uni still, or has it dissipated through and into the local music scene like you wanted?
Well, I think time will tell. Because what we found, like, a lot of the people who helped, a lot of our core fan base who, like, helped start it and go to a lot of the events, like, a lot of them are graduating, so, like, we are going to try and make more of an effort, you know, like, and still keep a big core in the university, like, to have it, because, you know, Enno's still going to be studying, like,
yeah.
You know, we're going to have people involved who still go to university, because I think it's still important to do that. However, it is also a good opportunity to try and, you know, introduce people who aren't necessarily from there to the field. Like, I think with our uni, as I think, or in unis in general, like, I think it happens less in other places, though. A lot of people do treat it like a bubble. So, like, there are a lot of people I know who live in Reading as students, and they've never spoken to non-students or, you know, really hang out with them. But I've also got friends who, like, some of their best mates are non-students. They're just mates who are, you know, or they're just people. And there's a lot of people who sort of, I don't know, they're quite weirded out by people who don't go to the specific university they go to.
No.
It's quite strange, but yeah.
I think we've tried to, like, keep separate from the uni quite a lot. Like, we try not to mention the university too much in our posts or anything anymore. We try to, like, promote it towards anyone to come. And we've got quite a few locals that do show up most of the time to our events, which is good, because, like, moving forward, we would like to not just stick to Reading. It would be nice to play in other cities as well. Because I do think there is a feeling of you can only get this far in Reading. But, like, it would be nice to keep Reading as our home base of, like, organising events. Because we mentioned Incognito earlier, and, like, they've moved on from Reading to London, and they've got a regular night going on there now, and doing pretty well. So, like, that might be in store for us as well, but it'd be good to just keep it here as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And so, Anna, you're studying at uni. Am I right in saying you've got 1 year left then?
1 year left, yeah.
Remind me, what are you studying at the moment?
I study art. It's a 4-year course, so I get to say bye to all my friends. That's what I'm studying. It does like translate a little bit into like Le Bon, as like I've been using it as like a side project and like translating it to my art at some point, like in second year. I did Le Bon as my main art project, and I'm really interested in the links between visual arts and the music scene, more specifically the underground music scene. I'm writing my dissertation on that as well, but I'm still ironing out what exactly I'm going to be writing about.
Okay.
But I'm very interested in whatever the link between the two, because I think Nats and the underground scene has got a lot in common with the art scene. Same with DJing. It's basically curating, which is another strong, you know, like, part of art as well, the curating of art.
For sure, yeah. I could definitely see the link there. And you talked earlier, Andy, about, I can't remember his name, was it Ben? Who does all your digital graphic design. So is it just the three of you then, or is anyone else involved in this project?
So it's NOI, it's Maeve, who does like a lot of our promotion stuff.
Yeah.
She's almost sort of a bit like the mother hen who sort of keeps us all in check, as it were, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And she's quite essential for, like, she's a very sociable person, when we all are, but, like, she's the sort of person who's can walk into any room and just sort of get the whole room to get on with her. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's quite useful, if you know what I mean. Mm. You know, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've also got Sam.
Yeah.
Who has been with us from the start, and like he mainly kept himself busy with like the main organising as well as financial situation management of the nights, also like the technical side of the nights. So, yeah.
Yeah,
everything that we didn't think of, he would think of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's and because he was quite, I mean, when we did our last Finn event, he was like, he also has a job where he goes away every weekend and does like wedding filming, I think, with his brother. So he wasn't actually able to attend this one. And a lot of it was down to us to sort of organise, okay. It was a big sort of, you know, like, you
I
did a lot.
I think we missed
you
know. Him. Yeah, okay. We definitely missed him.
And well, that gave a lot of us a chance to sort of step up and, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And I do think, like, moving forward, it kind of made us realise that next year, considering that most of us are graduating as well, like, Maeve and Ben are both graduating, and he's moving away to Bristol, that we need to expand our team a little bit and try and cover ourselves a bit more, because we've got a really good core and we've got the organising bit sorted, but like on the night it would relieve a lot of stress, and promoting it would relieve a lot of stress of everything that comes with it.
So that, I wonder then if that, you know, in a year's time is going to be a really crucial point to going back to what you said earlier about you guys wanting to expand a little bit into other cities and stuff, whether, you know, if some part of the team does move away, if that is a way of creating a bit of a hub in one spot or another. But
could be.
So it sounds quite exciting, really. I mean, I wonder what are your visions going forward then? Obviously, you mentioned branching out from Reading, but do you, say in 10 years' time, like, what, where do you see Le Bon Music heading? What would you love to do with this project?
I think my main vision is, it starts off with my own self, as in hopefully building a lot of friendships and links in Bristol to music and stuff like that, and then really, really trying to push, you know, like, as much as we can, you know, to go there. Hopefully, you know, other people, like, I think Maeve is thinking of living in London, like, she can do the same. Like, we all have, I think we'll all have places that we all want to live and that in the future, and just trying to bring it there, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, I think that's the only way you can survive, really. Like, you know, I don't know how many people want to stay in Reading forever, but you know,
I think we kind of at like this weird point now where we're not entirely sure where things are going to go, but the only thing we are sure of is that we want to continue it.
Yeah, exactly. The main thing is intention.
Like, we most people graduating also call is that we lose a big chunk of our core. So now it's like the unknown of, are we still going to be able to sell out big venues? Or then there's the unknown of how easy it will be to organise the whole event as like we did before, because we're not all like in the same place anymore.
Sure.
Who are we going to book, all that stuff. Like, we still need to decide a lot of like what we want to do, but in 10 years time, I think, like, I've been I'm personally someone who likes to work in goals for myself, and like, I think keep like the goal as small as possible and then upgrade each time.
Okay.
And I think, like, definitely doing a party somewhere else in another location, that would be a nice goal.
That's it.
And another one that I think me and Maeve have been sharing is either get a little small stage at a festival somewhere, that would be really nice, or turn it into a label. It would be really good to start releasing some music of artists that we know or have been in contact with us, and then just host label parties. It'd be really good to just to get into that, but we haven't really decided anything.
Okay.
A lot of ideas.
Yeah.
And just,
well, we've
action.
Been toying with that a little bit, so I've got a few tunes that I've made that I think, you know, sort of like, they're sort of like a bit of housey breakbeat sort of stuff, but we'd like to release, and I think, you know, we're going to sort of make a little platform for them and then just ask other friends and people we know if they just want to have songs and just put them on SoundCloud. It's quite nice to have, you know, like an original piece, if you know what I mean. Like, I think there's a lot of channels that get quite big of just like, you know, like uploading or sharing other people's music, but it's like, I think it will give us the edge or give us something that feels a bit more unique if we're just actually, we've got tunes directly from people and they're like, oh, we want this to be the platform to premiere our music and, like, and no one else can have it.
Because it's kind of like, we've been, this year, starting with Alexander event at Face Bar, like, we were focusing on artists that we booked, but like, I think now we've started to get the feeling like, actually, we've got like these artists that have played for us already, like the smaller ones that we know personally and like are friends with and stuff like that. and that we should be promoting ourselves as well as artists, and like use our platform that we've created to like push everyone that we've been involved with as well, because I think we've forgotten about that side quite a lot, because that's where, how it all started as well. Give small artists a platform to start playing, students who've been DJing in their bedroom to like give them a night somewhere that they can play in a club or a bar. And I think like this year, like we've kind of forgotten about that. So it'd be nice to start pushing that side of us again.
Almost just sticking to your roots.
Yeah, really. But also still book artists that we want to see.
Yeah,
very much so.
I suppose that's the only way your platform really is going to keep growing, so that you can carry on having a platform to support more artists. Exactly, too, isn't it? It's like a fine balance, I suppose. So the one scene then has been going on for about 2 years now.
Two years.
What have been some of the challenges then that you guys have faced over that period?
I think the last challenge I can think of was probably for our last event, and just the fact that a lot of people, we did it at a time where a lot of people were sort of up in the air whether they're going to be in Reading or not, or they're doing other things, and people are going here and there. It's more the uncertainty of like, oh, are people actually going to go to it, or have they decided to? I think that's one thing, you know, because doing, you know, or we've certainly learnt that doing promotion, you know, like we had to step up our game a little bit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think us being around, like, I think Incognito opened the door for smaller collectives to in Reading to start their own nights, and now we've got quite a few people. We've got Rems that we're good friends with and host events with, and we got Oto doing events as well in Reading, and the more towards the underground. We have quite a few this year, and I think promo has been one of the hurdles that we face, as well as like the uncertainty of we are graduating and like where are we gonna go from here. Which is still a little bit ongoing, but I think we have now like kind of like decided, like everyone, like let's keep it going. And so like, hopefully that is
cool. So on that note then, on the promotion note, where can people find out about the Bond Music and what's going on?
So I think our main sort of hub is just Facebook, really. So we have the group that we've discussed. It's literally just called Le Bon Musique, so if you search that. And then we also have a page, which that's where we do most of our own stuff, so you know, sharing our events or sharing people's music, that sort of thing.
And then we've also got Instagram, SoundCloud, about everything really.
Cool. All right, well, I'll put those links in the show notes for everyone to like click on and have a look at. Where did the name Le Bon Musique come from?
Just randomly, because it was just for our friends, and it was first a group of like 20 people. And I think Maeve at the time was learning French because she was going like to France for a while. And she wrote Le Bon Musique as the title, and it kind of stuck because as it started getting bigger, it was kind of like, shouldn't really change our name suddenly. So like we kept it and it stuck.
Awesome. Well, it's been so good chatting to you guys and finding out a lot more about it. I'm really excited to see what the next year or two holds for you guys, and I'm hopefully looking forward to seeing you both. I know you're playing at that Will's EP launch.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Man, so by the time this podcast comes out, it will already have been an event that's happened and been and gone, so hopefully it was sick and we had a great night. But thank you both for joining me so much. Been a really good conversation.
Thank you for having us.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you everyone for listening. Hope you've enjoyed. We'll catch you on the next episode. Just before we end this podcast, I want to say a big shout out to Enno and Andy for doing such a great job, and I want to reach out to the rest of the Le Bon Musique group, everyone that's supporting and everyone else that's involved in the project itself. I think you're all doing a fantastic job. Keep it up. And on that note, I'd like to shout out also the After Dark Music Club. Having been there recently on the latest Le Bon Musique night, I had a fantastic time. There's a lot of great history and culture going on there, and I think it's such a worthwhile cause if we can help to save the After Dark Music Club. I've put a link in the show notes to this podcast for you to sign a petition. So thank you in advance if you do go ahead and sign the petition. It takes a couple of minutes, if that, and your support will go such a long way. If you believe in local music, local venues, history and culture in Reading, history and culture anywhere, then please, please, please show your support for the After Dark Music Club. Thank you again for listening. If you haven't already, please go ahead, follow the podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're on all those platforms. Also, go ahead and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And also, I've put the links in the description for all of the Le Bon Music Facebook and social links. So please go ahead and check those guys out too. Thanks again for listening. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we'll catch you on the next one. Take care.